Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Drex Radio Show continues. I'm John Lobertini, KGO 810.
You went on this show.
You kind of have to keep up with it. It's very intelligent.
It sounds like a scam.
They are not part of the legitimate business world.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Bust it! This here's a tale for all the voters, for those committed and not the floaters. You think I'm down because of all the gloaters? What I need's a good promoter. I'm on a mission and I'm wishing. I want to change the country's condition. Looking for votes in all the right places. All I want to see are those grinning faces. My inclination is frustration. This is my life, my occupation. But don't get fooled, I got some moves, because right now you're looking at a hip old Jew.
Busted, Bernie.
That's right. Bust a Bernie. The revolution is me. Until we get to Super Tuesday, where I might be squashed like a pea.
I love it. Bust a Bernie. Thank you very much to my producers. You know, that's right up there with the Bernie Delight to Rapper's Delight. I got to bring that one back. I keep forgetting to play that. Those two need to be in the power rotation before he goes away. Not saying that he's going to, but he needs to win quickly. All right, look who's here. It's John Lobertini.
Da-da-da.
Damn, Lobo. In
Damn.
Those vans. Damn, Lobo, in those vans.
Rocking those vans.
Damn, what is it? Damn, Dan?
Damn, Daniel.
Yeah. Damn,
we're doing
Daniel.
Damn, Lobo. Daniel.
Yeah.
We want you to be our Daniel. You know you are.
Yeah, you are.
No comment.
When I think of Daniel, I think of that song by Elton John. Waving goodnight on a plane. I can see the head. I can see the taillights heading for Spain. I can see Daniel waving goodbye. All right, Lobertini's here because we're going to talk about condoms.
Yeah, Mr. Condom is coming back to San Francisco.
Mr. Condom's coming back to San Francisco. How delightful. But he's coming to a middle school near you.
A middle school near you. The school board, mm-hmm. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that there was a recommendation made that condoms be made available to middle schoolers. And last night, the school board approved unanimously that they would start making those condoms available to kids. And we're talking about 5th, 6th, and 7th graders.
5th, 6th, and 7th. So that would be what age? I don't have kids.
Well, it's
11,
middle,
12.
Middle school. Yeah, 11, 12. Middle school is usually 5th and 7th and 8th grade.
I'm trying to think here. 11, 12.
At any rate.
Yeah, that's a little early, isn't
it? Kids are having sex at 9 and 10 now.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Well, yeah, they've done some research.
All right. I mean, I remember being 13 and having sex, but...
Really?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Slut.
Wow, I mean...
Slut-shaming you.
His parents clearly weren't watching him very closely.
What can I say? Once that thing goes north, that's it. All right.
But yeah, the studies show, I'm sure you're about to say this, that kids are experiencing puberty earlier and earlier than we all did.
Well, what they're finding out in San Francisco schools is that 5% of the students are having sex, and half of them are using condoms and half aren't. And, of course, obviously they're trying to cut down on sexually transmitted diseases, but I think maybe more importantly, trying to cut down on teenage pregnancies.
It's a good idea. So I'm sure that the parents, there were many parents up in arms about this.
There were people who said that, you know, teachers should be teaching algebra, not prophylactics. That, you know, making condoms available would be encouraging sexual activity.
There's always that one parent.
And there was at least one there.
Well, I guess, you know, when you start talking about 6th, 7th graders, I probably most parents want to think that that's not happening.
Sure, sure, you're in denial. Right, and then at the same time, look, if this were Arkansas, they'd probably be going nuts because they love having, you know, babies out of wedlock at 14 and 15 instead of educating kids. What? But in the Bay Area, where we're...
No, I think they'd be the opposite. Their heads would explode because they'd be so pissed off that that's such a liberal thought to hand out condoms.
Oh, that's exactly what I mean. Because they prefer that the kids have babies at 13. Right. Like, they literally do. Don't talk about sex.
Right. Yeah.
We'll just deal with it after the fact if the kid gets pregnant.
It's an ostrich thing. Stick your head in the sand and hope it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
But in the Bay Area, parents are much more enlightened.
They are. But interestingly enough, this is not the kind of thing that's, I mean, this has been prevalent at the high school level since the early 90s in San Francisco. But doing this in middle schools, and again, we're talking about 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, is a relatively new thing. Los Angeles and Oakland are the only cities in California that do this.
Oh.
And nationally, you know, they've actually shown positive results in places like New York City and Philadelphia and Chicago. And what's interesting about San Francisco is that there is no opt-out clause for parents. The school district will let them know once a year that we are making condoms available. The teachers, school nurses, social workers will be trained on how to, you know, execute this plan. But there is no opt-out program here. They'll let parents know, but they're making these things available.
Well, so they'll be in a basket in the cafeteria, or do you have to go down to the nurse's station? I mean, what do? I mean, you know, grab one out the door. I don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Condom's going to show up every Thursday and Friday. And, of course, for people who don't know, that was the figure in a public service campaign many years ago when, you know, they were trying to stop a lot of sexually transmitted diseases, not just teen pregnancy.
Well, we were talking about the whole Cala OSHA thing last night with the porn actors and the whole condom thing, and they're trying to keep things safe, and they were trying to make them wear goggles and surgical gloves, and it was just ridiculous, all of this Cala OSHA garbage. But on the other hand, kids nowadays, let's face it, they have access to free porn just like everybody else does, and they're looking at it and they're seeing it. So I think it's an important thing. I'm pro. I think I would be a little freaked out if I was a parent, but I would think about it and then I'd roll with it because you know the kids are looking at porn. And unfortunately...
Well, they don't need porn to figure out that they've got an urge.
I know, right? I know. You're right about that, Heather, but I think what they're seeing on pornography a lot of times are people and porn actors not using condoms.
I see what you're saying.
You know, this is really a decades-old phenomenon.
Right.
It has been proven, you know, 10, 20 years ago that the sexualization of media and this civilization has accelerated, in girls in particular, the maturity. I mean, it's not uncommon now for girls as young as 9, 10, or 11 to have their menstrual cycle for first time. 7, 8.
Wow.
Yeah. I think so.
And the connection has been made to everything that you see, you know, whether it's half-naked models in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit calendar or what you're seeing on MTV. It's all over the place. And that visualization, what these kids are absorbing daily, is speeding up their development and maturity.
Okay.
Physical maturity.
All right, so San Francisco will start handing out condoms. So you don't know specifically how yet. They have not.
Well,
come up with a plan.
I do know how. There won't be baskets, but they will have school nurses and social workers that will be available if kids want the condoms.
Well, see, I think it really should be like a grab bag in the cafeteria, because here's why. Because if I'm a sixth grader, I'm not going to go up to the nurse or the principal's office and say, hey, can I have some condoms?
You know what? They're still working this thing out. May very well be that they'll drop one in their little homework boxes every other week or once a week, just in case. I mean, they're probably getting those things for free.
I would hope so.
So,
right.
You know, I wouldn't expect that supply would be a problem.
Okay.
It's interesting.
It is.
At least it kicks off a conversation that were the parents not having it with the kid, they would have now.
Right.
Yes, that's a very good point. Yeah.
And learned about sex from their parents? I think we all learned about it in school from the kids around us. Not very well, but we learned about it.
Heather raised your hand. I think you're the only one.
My mom was very clinical. I knew pretty much everything at 5.
We just...
man and a lady love each other very much.
We even
had a pop-up book that showed a couple sliding between the sheets together.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was very cute.
That was a bit much.
They didn't use the 10 thing, did they?
You know what? My parents wanted to, you know, allow us to enjoy our childhood, knowing full well that we weren't getting out of their sight very often.
I have to tell you,
I still enjoyed my childhood. I just knew where babies came from.
I'm still waiting for the talk. Maybe that's my problem.
Really? Bet that says a lot.
I'm still waiting for that damn conversation.
And how would you like that to go?
Drex, you can be and do whatever you want.
Great. That's how I've been living my life for the past however many years.
Amen.
Thanks, Mom, Dad.
All right, there you go. All right, let's go around the world with Marty Essen coming up next. This is going to be a fun conversation, so don't go away. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
If you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. The Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
You're listening to the Drex Radio Show. Oh, thank you for the Daniel. I can see Daniel traveling tonight on a plane. Well, speaking of planes, look who just flew in. It's Marty Essen, who is the author of Endangered Edens. And you've been to 7 continents. I mean, I don't know what to say. You've just been everywhere in the whole wide world.
I have a lot of fun.
I know. So you're in the Bay Area. I know that you do a lot of college speeches and those sort of things. Is that what you're doing?
Well, yeah. I live in Montana, but I was just out in Seattle. And by the way, I tuned you guys in while I was in Seattle. Came in crystal clear.
Isn't that amazing?
In the automobile that I had rented. So right. I was listening to you guys on Monday night. But yeah, I had to show up in the Seattle area. And then tomorrow, I'm at Santa Rosa Junior College in Petaluma.
Great. Well, so let's talk about you going around the world. So I think, you know, we did the podcast series with you and we talked about some of the things, your favorite places. But, you know, let's get to specifics for people who, you know, want to explore the world. What would be some of your favorite places and suggestions for people to, whether they're young and, you know, you do these things when you're young and then you make your living with your business. And then there's also the retirement. And you think, well, where should I go?
Well, for retirement, you know, so many people now are going to Costa Rica.
Yes.
And I have a whole chapter in my new book, Endangered Edens, about Costa Rica. And it's just amazing. And one of the things, you know, I was listening to your show earlier. You were talking about stress levels and happiness level.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things I was doing research on Costa Rica for my book is on the happiness level charts, Costa Rica is through the roof, and they're also the second greenest country in the world, and they put away 25% of their land for conservation. So you've got a country that you might think it's a third world country because it's in Central America, but yet they've got a literacy rate that's close to what the United States has. Their life expectancy is exactly the same as the United States. So in fact, when we arrived at the airport in San Jose, we immediately ran into some Americans that had moved down there and were retiring. So that's a great place to do that.
That's interesting because, you know, there are places where you can pick up and move to and there are places you cannot. So Costa Rica, as an American, you can actually move and live there.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's relatively safe. Everybody always worries about that. You know?
I didn't worry about safety at all. In fact, you know, one of the things when you fly into airports in other countries, you know, the first thing you run into when you get outside the airport is there are all these hucksters, you know, trying to give you rides
right,
and everything.
Right.
And I thought that was happening when we showed up at Costa Rica. All these people came up to us, but they weren't hucking rides. Instead, what they were doing is trying to help us out and make sure we went to the right place. And they were so friendly. It was just a great way to get introduced to Costa Rica.
And they operate on the dollar, right?
No, they have their own currency.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So have they fixed the roads? I was there maybe a decade ago, and it was really something.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I didn't spend much time on roads because where we went in Costa Rica, I wanted to get to a place that was out of the way. And so we went directly from the airport. We flew out to a little teeny town, and then we got on a boat and went up the coast and spent a place where there were no roads. And so it was a week out in the rainforest away from people.
Cool.
It was an amazing experience.
Well, you have to know Marty and you have to read his book, the other one, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet. I mean, this dude, like, he hangs out with alligators and snakes in the Everglades. You're, like, insane. You get attacked by hippopotamuses. I mean, it's just nuts. I would say you're a lucky man to be here. Some of the things that you've done, especially the hippo experience.
Well, should we tell the hippo story?
Sure, go
ahead.
Okay,
well, here's the hippo story. Now, this isn't my first book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet. We were in Zimbabwe. And
That's scary in itself.
Yeah, and at the time we went... Parade magazine, which is, I think you probably get that in your Sunday paper. Mm-hmm. They had Robert Mugabe listed as the number one worst dictator in the world.
Oh, that's
But where we were in Manipools, it wasn't too bad, and we didn't have to worry about Robert Mugabe. We hiked 53 miles across Manipools National Park, and then we got into canoes to retrace our tracks down the Zambezi River. And we had seen these huge Nile crocodiles on the riverbank. And we were told we would pass 1,500 hippos on our way down the river. And we were nervous about this. And
I would be.
Yeah. And so our guide sat us down and said, listen, I've been taking people down the Zambezi River for 18 years. Don't worry. I've never had anyone attacked by an animal. It would be safe and easy. So we get into canoes, five canoes in all. We head down the Zambezi River. And we immediately come across this barricade of hippos. And the hippos, they're snorting and they're roaring. And I'm wondering,
right,
how are we going to get past these hippos? And but the hippos sink underneath the water and we canoe right over them. And then later on, we come to a part of the river where we don't see any hippos. And it's a beautiful day. We're relaxed. We're right against shore because it's deep there. And that's generally where it's safest to be. And all of a sudden, we feel this bump. And next thing you know, my wife and I are 6 feet up in the air.
Oh, my God.
The hippo came underneath us, and its lower tusk went right through the bottom of the canoe. And this will give you an idea how big a hippo's mouth was. Its top jaw came over and snapped the gunwale. So the entire middle of the canoe was in this hippo's mouth. And it lifted us 6 feet up in the air, and I fly out of the canoe first, and then my wife flies out of the canoe, and she hits the ground with this eerie thud. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, she's dead. And then I run up to her. Deb, are you okay? Are you okay? And she gets up, and then we remember
Deborah, your first wife.
Deborah.
I'm just kidding.
My first wife.
And, before the hippo. That's the one that got eaten by the hippo.
B-H and A-H, no.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, we wheel toward the water. The hippo drops the canoe and then sinks back into the water. And the two of us look at each other, and we realize, hey, we're okay. And we break into hysterical laughter because how often does someone get a chance to be attacked by a hippo and live through it?
Well, and then what did you say to the guide? What the hell? So your odds are up, buddy. What are you going to tell the next suckers that come down this river?
Yeah, right.
We were in upset about it. I mean, what we figured happened is the hippo was underneath the water and it was surfacing and hit its head on the bottom of the canoe and then had a temper tantrum. And it just took us out of its way the only way it knew how. And, yeah, our guide was actually really upset at himself, wondering what he did wrong.
Well, I think so, yes. I don't know if that's as bad as a Trumper tantrum, but...
Trumper tantrum.
But wait, so
pretty bad.
You're both on the shores of the Zambezi, and you laugh, but then you realize... WTF, our boat's gone.
Yeah, well, right. we ended up having to double up in canoes.
Okay.
Because it was going to get dark soon, and people were expecting us downriver. And the other two couples didn't want to continue. They were saying, we're done.
Right.
We're hiking out of here.
Get the helicopter. We're out of here.
And
that would be me.
But so we finally talked them into doubling up, and my wife has to take the middle of one of the canoes. And we're still laughing because we're just slap happy with adrenaline from what happened. And so I can see it as we push out onto the water. The other two couples are literally physically shaking with fear about having to face the hippo again. The hippos
again.
That
would be
again.
Me.
And
yeah.
My wife and I were still laughing, and I see her in the middle of the canoe, and I yell to her, Deb, you're sitting in the death seat. And our guide goes, shh, because I'm making things so much worse for the other two couples.
Okay.
Who witnessed it, which might have even been more terrifying in a way.
I'm not about hanging out with hippos.
You guys are hilarious. I got to travel with you. That's what I would have done.
Okay, let's take a break and we'll be back. And we'll have more fun with Marty Essen, who is the author of Endangered Edens. And we'll talk about his appearance here in the Bay. Coming up on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
We're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
You're listening to the Drex Radio Show live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. What is that playing in my ear? Is that something strange? Sounds like it's from Mars. You know, I have something really weird to play here. Marty Essen is my guest, and he's in town. You're speaking tomorrow. Where at?
Santa Rosa Junior College, the Petaluma campus. I was told by the college I got to tell everybody the Petaluma campus.
Okay, and so are you going to speak to Around the World in 90 minutes?
Yeah, I'm doing Around the World in 90 minutes at 2 o'clock in the theater at the college.
Oh, that'll be great. All right, and he has been around the world. Listen to this. This is the weird noise. This has been going on for a long time because I was wondering what that music was. But this is Forest Grove, Oregon. For the past few weeks, nobody knows where this is coming from. It's not train tracks. They think it's something really weird. I mean, listen to this. I mean, it's just somebody recorded this on a cell phone video. Now, it's not. People have guessed train tracks, truck brakes, gas leak, forestry equipment, government. You know, but it's been going on for a long time. And it keeps making the news, and they keep, you know, trying to record this thing, and then they've got it, but, you know, what is it?
It almost reminds me of listening to the foghorns when I lived up in Duluth, Minnesota, on Lake Superior, except not quite so high.
Right, but you knew what that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back around the world. Where do you want to go?
How about Antarctica?
Okay, that's fine.
I love Antarctica, and, you know, it's one of those things. As an author writing about Antarctica, I'd like to tell people what a great place it is. But on the other hand, you feel kind of guilty. It's like, I don't want to send all these people down there, but because then it won't be so great.
Right, it's a hell of a trip.
Yeah, but it was really one of the most fun places I've ever been. We get on a ship at the very southern tip of South America, and then it takes a couple days on the ship to get to Antarctica. And the neat thing about Antarctica, I think the two things that stand out the most for me were how beautiful it was. You've got these beautiful icebergs that are like this windshield washer fluid blue.
Oh, yeah.
And huge icebergs. And some of them, we went into this bay Paradise Bay. And you've got these icebergs that look like somebody was there and chiseled them out and made them into things. It's just so beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And then the other neat thing about Antarctica is, now if you go to the other six continents, all of the animals have had thousands upon thousands of years of exposure to humans. But down on Antarctica, humans have only been down there for about 200 years. So the animals don't have this natural fear of humans. And, you know, penguins are just great. You know, everybody loves penguins. And, you know, we had strict rules. You know, first of all, leave no trace, but also we could not approach any animal closer than 15 feet. But the animals, they didn't have any rules, and they would come right up to us. They'd start pulling on shoestrings or pulling on pant legs, and then if you walked away, they would follow you as if you were mom. And so the penguins, they were just amazing. And then you've got seals down there, and probably the best adventure were the humpback whales. We were just getting ready to leave Antarctica when our captain spotted three humpback whales. And, you know, I know you have whales here, so maybe it's not as big of a deal to you people, but to us down there in Antarctica.
Oh, it's always wonderful to see.
It's always a big deal.
Well,
at least, Marty, it's not like the hippo. It didn't overturn your boat,
no,
I think. It wasn't Moby Dick.
No, but the cool thing was we were out in kayaks, and the humpback whales played with us for a good, probably 2 hours.
Okay, so you're nuts. I mean, you're fooling around with hippopotamuses, and so you're in kayaks with humpback whales.
Yeah, down in Antarctica. And so what would happen is the humpback whales would surface several hundred feet away from us, and they'd come above the water, and they'd come right at us. And just when it looked they might knock us in the water, they'd dive underneath and then surface on the other side and then maybe do a big roll. And then they'd repeat. And it was just so cool to watch these whales. And they were watching us. What they would do is they would turn their giant 45-foot-long bodies sideways to bring an eye above the water so that they could look at us as we looked at them.
That is nuts.
No. So that's I love all of that. And so, you know, your perspective on that as somebody who looks at endangered species, Do you think that's an intelligence thing, that factor,
quotient?
They knew, they were cognizant of the fact that you were there. They did not want to hurt you, but they wanted to play with
you. Yeah, exactly. In fact, there were some people, some people that went down and scuba dived with the whales.
Oh, I got to do that.
And they said it was just, they felt like such klutzes. They could barely move down below the water, but these whales, were so graceful. They would come right at the divers, and just at the last second, they would veer off and not so much as touch them. And it was
like playing chicken in a way.
Yeah, kind of like playing chicken, but, you know, just curious. And, yeah. And if they weren't enjoying our company, they would have been long gone. They could have gotten away from us real easy, but they were having fun. And there was a baby there, and they would do these rolls, and they do the big rear fin up in the air and slap it down. And, yeah, it was amazing. And then you've got this, and you're looking at the whales with the background of these blue icebergs and this just the gorgeousness of Antarctica.
Unbelievable.
Now, are there glaciers? Is there calving going on?
The calving of the glaciers.
Right.
When someone asks me, what is the thing about Antarctica that strikes you the most? And I have to say it was how loud Antarctica was. Yeah. And and that's because, we're not supposed to, I don't know how political you want me to get, but it's because of global
warming. It's all
good here.
Right.
It's because of global warming down there. And these glaciers and these big ice cliffs are calving off into the water and at a very rapid rate. So that was the one negative about being down there. And in fact, one of the things I show in the show that I do at colleges is this picture from just a little ways back looking at Antarctica. And you've got these tall ice cliffs. And then you can kind of see the ice and everything going up kind of as a dome, and it just keeps going up. And it gives you a feel for just how much ice and how much snow is on Antarctica. And people say, well, if that melts, well, it's just like an ice cube in a glass. It's not going to raise the water. But it does, because the ice there is on land. And
right.
So when it goes into the water, it is going to raise the ice levels or the water levels. And that's something, I talk about in switching to the Everglades and the Everglades chapter of my new book. One of the reasons why the Everglades is going to be in trouble is because you're going to have salt water coming into the Everglades, because the Everglades is at such a low level. It's almost at sea level. And so you've got the salt water that will eventually basically destroy the Everglades.
Okay, we'll talk about the Everglades next, because it's an interesting story, too. I mean, just as hearkening, and you're brave soul. Marty Essen is my guest, and he is the author of Endangered Edens, which I'm sure you can get everywhere, and Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, and you will be lecturing around the world in 90 minutes. We'll continue our conversation next on KGO 810.
Talk radio to feed your brain. The Drex Radio Show, weeknights at 7 on KGO 810.
Good evening, everybody. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show, and my guest is Marty Essen, and he is the author of Endangered Species. And by the way, you were at Kepler's bookstore, right?
Yeah, it was at Kepler's bookstore earlier today. So if anybody would like to get a signed copy of the book, I signed a whole bunch of copies. They're waiting at Kepler's in Menlo Park.
Right on. So check it out. All right. I wanted to mention this because I mentioned it earlier. The consulting firm Mercer just released their annual list of best cities to live in, and not a single American city made the top 25. San Francisco started at 28.
Yeah, I heard that.
So the top cities in the world are Vienna, Austria, Zurich, Switzerland, Auckland, New Zealand, Munich, Germany, and Vancouver, Canada. Baghdad came in last. Guess we didn't help them. We didn't help them do them any favors there.
No, we didn't.
Yes, with shock and awe. But, to your point, and some of your favorite places, you talked about Antarctica, and I will get to the Everglades thing, but I wanted to ask you specifically about Antarctica. No one really owns Antarctica, do they? I mean, it's not a provincial territory of any country.
Well,
it's
one of the neat things is, we actually went to different research stations that were run by different countries. And
And
legally, those parts are parts of the country. So we went to a research station run by the UK, and we got our passport stamped right there on
Antarctica.
That's
what I was curious about. So if somebody really wants to go to Antarctica, you don't need a visa.
No, you don't. But you can visit all sorts of different countries on Antarctica, because there are different claims, but the claims are somewhat controversial,
I'm
and the
sure.
claims overlap.
Right, and they move.
And they move, yeah.
Yeah, but I know the South Pole has to be repositioned all the time.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's some controversy there, but, you know, on the other hand, it is the one continent of peace, so...
Amen to that. Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, so let's talk about the Everglades, because you were talking about the glaciers melting and how that's going to affect the Everglades.
Well, you know, the Everglades were
global warming.
Yeah. We had that. That's one of the things. You know, you have the two iconic species down there are the alligators and the great egrets, and both of those animals were almost hunted to extinction. And we have a great example of early conservation efforts. Protected those creatures from extinction. They've made great comebacks, but now they're going to get hit again with rising ocean levels and possibly salt water coming into the Everglades. And, you know, then it's going to be game over if that happens for them. It's
becomes brackish water.
Yeah, it's not
really
like
it doesn't work.
Yeah, an alligator can't all of a sudden become a saltwater animal, and an egret can't drink salt water. So, you know, the egrets may be able to move, but the alligators aren't going to be able to move very far. So, yeah, they're endangered.
The Everglades is a very interesting place. And, you know, now with the pythons there and the boas, I mean, I just read last month they had this giant hunt to have people go out and with bounties, contests, trying to get rid of these huge snakes that people have released. And it's
And, you know, that's kind of a human problem all over the world. When, for instance, when I was in the Amazon, we found what are called marine toads, which are these huge toads. That are the world's largest toads, and they're great to find when you're down in the Amazon. Later on, we went to Australia, found the same toads, but they're called cane toads. And happened is people brought these toads to Australia, renamed them cane toads, figuring that they would take out the cane beetle. And it turned out that cane toads like to eat basically everything except cane beetles.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And they've got these huge poison glands. And in the Amazon, these poison glands aren't a problem. These are poison glands that are on their back because the animals in the Amazon had evolved with these toads and knew how to deal with it. But you move them to Australia and the animals have no idea what to do with these poison glands. And so you've got animals that are eating these toads and then dying before they even swallow it. And so, yeah, you have that there. You have the, going back to the Everglades. You've got the problem with the big Burmese pythons down there that have, you know, whether they were released intentionally or not is a matter of controversy. But the point is they are there and they don't belong there. So
right. And good luck. I mean, they make these efforts to have these bounty catches, but good luck finding them in the Everglades for God's sake.
Snakes are the world's best hiders. I mean, they just are. They've got great camouflage. And, you know, they can not move for a long time. I know I have three of them. I have three rainbow boas. I have Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve are about 6 or 7 feet long. In fact, we'll get off on a side story here that's really funny. When I went on my first book tour, I brought Adam with me on the book tour, and we're going from Montana all the way to Minnesota and back and hitting bookstores and talking at radio stations. And at one of the radio stations, I brought Adam to the interview.
Wait a minute, is he here now?
No, Adam's not here now. But so the announcer knew she was going to be scared, but we wanted to do it for the live effects. So we brought Adam out for the interview. So I have one of the world's most famous rainbow boas who has done radio interviews. But he starts getting into the microphones and into the cords. Uh-oh. And so we're trying to do this interview as we're cracking up as my rainbow boa is getting in all the cords. And it was just hilarious. So
I love it. Did anyone take video?
No. We've got Adam and Eve, the two adults, and then we've got what we call Little Snake, which is one of their offspring that I ended up keeping And so we've got the three rainbow boas at home.
That is such a funny name. Well, I totally get the joke.
Yeah, who's going to babysit those things while you're on your tour in Petaluma?
Well, my wife is there, but snakes take care of themselves.
I have to meet your wife.
I hear. Yeah.
She must be amazing.
No kidding. We've got a minute or so. So what's next? I mean, you've done seven continents. Where would you like to go next?
Next, I think probably New Guinea is one of the tops on my list because
really,
I think.
Why would you pick that?
Well, when I try to think of places that are exotic.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons I went to Borneo. What was the most exotic place out there? In Borneo, we certainly thought would be exotic. And when we got there, it turned out to be exotic. And New Guinea is another one of those places, where they're still discovering new species. And there's a lot about New Guinea we don't know. So, you know, maybe my next book, I'm thinking about maybe doing islands, and we'd certainly be able to include New Guinea in that.
For sure. Well, it's been a pleasure having you in. And
it's been great talking to you guys.
I love it. It's Endangered Edens is the name of your book, and you can get it at Menlo Park at Kepler's if you want a signed copy.
And it's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places.
You know,
well,
we should mention that your lecture series tomorrow is open to the public. You don't have to be a college student.
Absolutely. 2:00 in the theater, Santa Rosa Junior College in the Petaluma campus.
And so he does this incredible slideshow. So you'll love it.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I have a blast doing it.
Well, thank you very much, Marty.
Thank you, guys. Okay. It's been a blast being
happy
on your show.
Happy trails.
Thank you
for
so
sure.
Much.
Yeah. Stay away. I don't know. I can tell you to stay away from things I just know you're not going to. So let me know. Just tell me what's next. All right. Thank you, Marty. We're going to take a break, and we'll continue with the Late Night Late Show wrap-up on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.